Yes, folks, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Jeff Bryant, alongside Keith. This is Now We're Talking. You know, last week we hosted episode number 18. And if you check it out online, because by the way, if you don't know, we do the show live from 6 to 7 p.m. every Sunday, but also it's available at CITR.ca. The episode was called The Orange Nightmare. The description that I wrote last week was, Jeff and Keith discuss the orange nightmare that has plagued us all and will finally this week be confronted with a U.S. referendum on decency. And that's what happened. I mean, we'll get into this today, that we're going to follow up on this conversation. A lot of people are thinking about it. Maybe we can find some humor in it. Maybe we can find some darkness in it and everything in between. We're going to invite people to call in. There's so much that I've felt this week. This is something I've been following for the last year. I think there's been these different stages of people imagining that this might not be the outcome, and I'm somewhat sympathetic to that, but I also I see how shocked people are, and it concerns me that each stage in this process is as shocking as it is. So Keith has written essays for the show in the past, so this week before we met to do the show, I just sat down to write something, so I'd like to share that with you right now. In 2015, recently elected Prime Minister Justin Trudeau stood before his newly appointed cabinet at a press conference and was asked why he chose to pursue gender parity in making his appointments. He proudly beamed in response, "Because it's 2015," to much applause and adulation from a great many Canadians who recognized the symbolic and practical value of this course. This week, the self-proclaimed feminist prime minister was specifically asked what he told his daughter after Trump won the American presidency. His response, "I told my kids that the relationship between Canada and the U.S. is a deep and positive one." This has not been met with the same chorus of exultation from those who share a rational belief that society will simply be better for all of us when there is gender equality. Was this evasive response an obvious political calculation, or was Trudeau candid in his description of this conversation with his daughter, a so-called teaching moment that many parents this week have struggled to address? Couching the matter of respectful treatment for women in such a robotic fashion, if believed, would surely bring to a crashing halt the Trudeau honeymoon period amongst progressives and break idealistic hearts across the country. No, this must be the measured response of a responsible statesman that, assisted with responsible advice, has concluded that the correct path forward is to show appropriate deference to a president-elect Trump. Trudeau proclaimed, "We're going to work constructively on this important relationship because that's what people expect." Perhaps he's right. Maybe Canadians, by and large, do expect prudence and diplomacy from their elected leader so that practical day-to-day matters of the economy and business as usual may be attended to. But what about the rest of us, those who perceive a broader threat that our immediate comfort and convenience, a broader threat than our immediate comfort and convenience? When the seeds of hate, intolerance, and fascism are being sown, should we allow them to take root so that we may expunge them from the ground at a time that is more politically expedient? How high do we allow these stalks of hate to rise while we subvert our better judgment so that we may behave practically and politely? Are we alarmist and ill-advised in this projection for the future based upon a current trajectory? Well, I fucking hope so. I hope sharing these concerns right now makes me the fool for the sake of us all. But I do have a very strong suspicion that the rise of the fool is at hand, and I will not be the one to profit from it. German Chancellor Merkel issued her own statement this week in response to the U.S. election, in which she struck a tone that seemed to expect more from a Trump administration than an expedient audience wherein she might pledge her allegiance to the new American president, which is customary. she said, Germany and American... Germany and Americans are bound by common values. Democracy, freedom, as well as respect for the rule of law, and the dignity of each and every person, regardless of their origin, skin color, creed, gender, sexual orientation, or political views. It is based on these views that I wish to offer close cooperation, both with me personally and between our country's governments. End of quote. So what's the difference between Canada and Germany, Trudeau and Merkel? Perhaps Canada lacks the leeway to express our own set of humanist ideals, given the enormity of our largest trading partner. Could be so. But perhaps Germany hasn't so easily forgotten the trauma of the past and is better equipped, with garden tools we haven't dreamed of, to confront with courage the vile weeds that now take root in this disgraceful period where we now flirt with fascism. I now welcome Keith into the program. And once again, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Now We're Talking. This is CITR 101.9 FM. That was my essay this week expressing my opinion as I see how the world reacts to a Trump presidency. Anytime I think about this or talk about this, I'm reminded of what the last 8 years has been like for the right in the U.S. with an Obama presidency. And I think about the inflamed, hateful rhetoric towards the left from the right, towards Obama, the extremity of labeling him a Muslim or the birther thing and all that. And I'm conscious of over-dramatizing the position on the left, whether or not that is playing into the same hand in the same game. And it very well may be. But that's a risk I'm willing to take, because I think the gravity of this is large. And I think that people misunderstand this in a number of different ways. But just in case you're wondering, this isn't a question of whether Trump himself seeks to or manages to pursue fascistic ideals. The point here is that the floodgates are open, folks. And by the way, so are the phones. 604-UBC-CITR, 604-822-2487. Please give us a call during the show and let us know your response to this. Maybe you have a different response than we do, and that's okay. Or so I think. It depends on how I feel when we talk. But we know we're going to make an effort to hear all opinions and have a conversation. But Keith, yes, at this point I welcome you to the show because I'm feeling like I'm striking a tone of being sanctimonious and professorial. But it just brings that out in me.
Mm. And I think it's important to say that when you said professorial, I thought of dinosaurs.
Nice. Why?
I don't know.
Just because you think about dinosaurs being
crazy.
A scholarly conversation.
That's right.
Well, you know, a lot of the people who voted for Trump wouldn't think of it as a scholarly conversation. They would probably just doubt the existence of dinosaurs. I'm reminded
of... Or they'd think that they rode them.
Well, sure. I'm thinking of a Bill Hicks joke where he talks about... dinosaur fossils, and he talks to some people who are Christian evangelicals, and they believe that God created the earth 6,000 years ago or what have you.
Creationism.
And he says, what about dinosaur fossils? And they say, dinosaur fossils? Well, I think God put them there to test our faith. And his response was, dude, I think God put you here to test my faith.
Bill Hicks is wonderful.
Yes,
wonderful
man,
Canadian.
You know, it's funny, I haven't thought about him this week, but now that he comes
boy,
to
oh
mind,
boy,
it would be
relevant.
Interesting to have him around.
Yeah, and if you don't know who we're talking about, seek him out. He's arguably the greatest comedian of all time, definitely top five for most big fans of stand-up comedy.
Certainly an agitator, certainly somebody who's willing to speak his mind, and I think that that's has value in all society.
Yeah, for sure.
So obviously it's a little bit different today. I mean, I was also conscious, you know, I was very, like a lot of people that I know, a lot of people in my... In my periphery, you know, I wasn't shocked by the election results in the sense that I didn't think it was possible, because I was very conscious of how that was a threat for people to imagine the opposite outcome being a foregone conclusion. But I was obviously dismayed by it, and I've been feeling that way this week. I, you know, thinking about doing the show, you know, I'm I'm hesitant for the show to become a political show where we talk about this and this is now the show. I mean, we mentioned as recently as a few weeks ago how we hadn't really acknowledged this playing out this summer. And for me, that wasn't because I wasn't thinking about it. It was because I wanted to allow this show to be all sorts of different things.
Yeah, me making funny faces and whatever that
which is a strange
on the radio
choice. It's definitely been a work in progress figuring out the medium.
Keith, would you like to come on the radio with me and do funny faces?
Yeah.
You bet.
That's why you first got the gig, but it's not
Can't see a problem with that.
It's not why you're still here. But anyway, as we move forward now, I'm still unclear about that. And doing the show this week, you know, I didn't necessarily think we're gonna come on and we're gonna call it like it is. And we're going to, you know, rally the people who already share the positions that you and I have, mm-hmm. because I'm aware of where we are. We're on we're on campus in Vancouver, and I'm not under any delusions that any of the positions I'm offering are going to be controversial given where we are. But I still feel the need to think about this thought, you know, to be thoughtful about this and to have thoughtful conversation about this. And because I just can't help but shake the feeling, Keith, that I've seen this story play out before. Mm-hmm. You and I got together the day after the election. You and I used to go for ambiguously gay walks through the forest. Mm-hmm. Until we found this show, now we just have an ambiguously mm-hmm. gay hangout here in the studio.
Yeah.
But we decided it was time to return to the woods because it was it mattered enough that we needed to compare notes.
We needed to hold hands.
We needed to hold hands and compare notes. And we talked for a couple hours. And I feel like our conversation wasn't grief-stricken. I feel like it was kind of level-headed.
Yeah, I felt like...
But what did we talk about?
Well, we kind of had to work it out.
Yeah.
Right? I think both of us wanted to get it off our chest before exposing ourselves to our public and our families.
Yeah, exposing our chests.
One point for me, I want to get this off my chest on the radio, something we did talk about during the week, and I think it's getting lost because it's probably not as important as some of the other things that are being talked about, but it's important to me, so here goes.
Please.
In a nutshell, what happened over the last 8 years was that the Republicans decided that they were going to try to inhibit Barack Obama from doing his job correctly or properly. They decided that the American people weren't as important as shutting this guy down, and a lot of things didn't get done, things like infrastructure and education and a lot of reforms, including immigration reform, were let go by the wayside and to focus on things like Benghazi and repealing Obamacare, things that were not going to happen with him in power.
Mm-hmm.
But it never occurred to me, nor did it occur to most liberals in the United States, that they would come out of that not seeming the villains. It was very obvious that they were shutting down the government, that they were being difficult, that they were digging their heels in because they didn't want this man to do what he wanted to do and to accomplish those things. It was the only thing they could think of to try to get themselves back into power. And we all agreed they were never going to achieve it that way. They were never going to get back into power being that way. The people are too smart for that. And then, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think Canadians, yes, Americans, no. Because I think that I'm struck as a Canadian who observes these elections. As I get older, it matters more to me, and I get more understanding of mm-hmm. what it is to be American. I've lived there a little bit, but I'm not American, and we're not American. They understand that there's two audiences, and there's mm-hmm. an audience that would have felt indignant about that narrative, and an audience that would have... Let me allow you to continue because mm-hmm. I'm actually opening up a bit.
Sure, we'll get to that. I get what you're saying.
Yeah, let me allow you to continue.
But, I mean, yes, so this idea that us up here and maybe similar thinking liberals down there had a feeling that these guys are never going to get back in power. They're messing it up. As to your point, obviously a lot of Republican followers were never going to see it that way. And what ended up happening was they did something almost unprecedented by trying to shut down that government and by just leaving and not doing their jobs. And it riled up the American people in theory. And then somehow we are now standing at a point where we can look back and see that they managed to cast those same aspersions, that fault, onto the Democratic candidate. They made it seem, whether it was by fluke or design or because Trump's a genius or because he's lucky, they made it seem to all of those people that it was Hillary Clinton who was establishment, that she was the problem, that she was government. And look how bad the government has been for you.
So sort of transfer those grievances onto
her.
Yeah,
they just basically made it suck and then said, well, she's establishment. She's the one who makes these things suck. And they whitewashed, which may be an appropriate term, if not a pun, this entire situation so that somehow a man like Donald Trump, who's anti-establishment and outside of all of this, and that's partially why he got put into government, why he put into the presidency, now the Republicans are back in power. And what's important to me right now is that whatever happened, however this conflict of events occurred, now the best case scenario is that Trump isn't a fascist, that Trump isn't going to do these horrible things, and we're just going to fall back into like kind of a low-level, slow burn of conservative ideals, that somehow the big shenanigans that they pulled by shutting down that government now gets them in a position to do what they want to do with government. And that's, like I said, the best case scenario, that they're going to try to repeal things, that they're going to hurt women's rights and gay rights and all these things that are important to the left side, all by making it seem like what they had done horribly was somehow Hillary Clinton's fault.
Well, I think that what it comes down to is, if you want to understand the difference between the right and the left, you focus on something like the Supreme Court. So, I mean, I don't think there's a lot of people in the United States who are swayed by one party or the other during an electoral cycle. I think they already know how they're going to vote.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you focus on the issue of the Supreme Court, it sheds some light on this, right? So when Scalia passed away at the beginning of the year, based on precedent, it was appropriate for the sitting president to nominate and for the Senate to confirm his whoever it is that the president appoints. And it was considered, in terms of precedent, to be outrageous that that was in a sense being obstructed by the Republican Senate. And initially there was a lot of outrage in, I guess, what you would describe as the left or the mainstream media, but I'm hesitant to characterize it that way. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of outrage, but they just dug in and they said, and the story became, we're waiting until the president is elected so that the voters can decide. Okay, so that was the story.
Yeah.
So ultimately, it just seemed like that was at an impasse. So the energies for both sides of the story was, let's win the presidency for any number of reasons, not the least of which, so that we dictate the majority of the Supreme Court. And leading up to the election, when it was looking likely that Clinton would win, you had Republicans, not of the fringe variety like Ted Cruz, but of the middle ground variety, like middle of the political spectrum variety, like John McCain, who, again, I talked about political calculations in terms of the statements that people make in my essay, but it's like, I have to imagine it's a political calculation for him to get reelected, made the statement that he would do whatever it took for 4 years to obstruct an appointment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was already, that is so beyond precedent. That's if you just looked at it objectively and you didn't have a dog in the fight,
mm-hmm.
that is an offensive.
Oh, yeah.
Offensive. And for it to come from a guy who I think Democrats look to as being reasonable,
yeah,
when it comes to the statements that,
yeah,
Trump
he has
made.
A great history of that.
With Pussygate or what, mm-hmm, have you. You look to him to sort of give you some hope.
Be the sane Republican.
So when he makes that statement, it really gets you thinking, why do people care so much of this? Well, it comes down to religion is a huge part of it,
mm-hmm,
and there might be some other elements too, but people are really intense in their belief. Should it be the right of the government to punish women or to have any influence over women in their choice of an abortion or not? If you're me, mm-hmm, and a lot of people that I know, they think it's offensive, the idea that you could tell somebody what to do with their body like that. And if you're on the other side of it, you find it very offensive that people would murder unborn children. So these issues are so firmly held. Whether it's Trump or Clinton, or it's they filibustered and they project that on to Clinton or whatever, all that peripheral stuff, at the end of the day, a lot of people would vote for Trump under all circumstances to pursue that agenda. And what's been illustrative about this cycle is he really pushed out the boundaries of what we expect in, mm-hmm, terms of being quote-unquote presidential or decent or what have you, that I think it just shows that there's a lot even my sense is that it could be pushed way further before somebody would bend on some of these convictions.
Yeah.
And I have to say, man, I haven't been stirred in my skepticism of organized religion for some time. It's something that really got under my skin a couple of years ago. I really became quite fixated on it. But this is accessing that and bringing it to the surface, because I feel like a lot of people have, I feel like typically when people have firmly held beliefs that oppose others, they're quite often like originate with religion and are strengthened by religion or radicalized by religion. And to me, just the idea that for example, that you should decide whether a woman can have an abortion, like you might not like it, but just if you don't like it, don't have one. It's not your place, you know? Folks, call in. We're ready to talk to you. It's 604-UBC-CITR. That's 604-822-2487. You know it's becoming interesting and controversial, even if it is, you know, liberal college here at College Radio, when we're passing judgments about issues like abortion and religion and politics.
Mm-hmm.
Please call us and offer some perspective so that I don't feel like I'm being overly sanctimonious. And Keith, you don't feel like what? What do you have a concern if somebody doesn't call, what'll happen? That's my concern.
No, I don't have a concern. But
Keith,
I think
has no concern.
I think this is an appropriate time, more so than any other, to get other voices involved.
Yeah.
We've talked about it a few times. So yeah, we welcome it today, and some different opinions and just an idea of how people are feeling. Again, I stress, I have a lot of the same feelings that a lot of frustrated people have, but I stress this idea that best case scenario, despite all these fears we had of Trump's possible fascism and, of course, the
historical.
Yeah, I was going to say, a little slip there. Historical mirrors that we're dealing with in terms of other fascists. What's the word? Conquerings. You know, fascism winning out. The fact that somehow through all of this, these normals, we'll say, of the Republican Party are going to get their agendas on the go as fast as possible. They're going to use Trump and the normalization of Trump by everyone to get their ideals going within the first 100 days. They're going to try to do a lot of things that we would have thought were really, really bad things before we decided that Trump's even more of a threat than that. He's even more of a threat than conservative government. So hope is something that's really important, and hope is something that I naturally lean towards. And I want to believe that he's not going to be all those bad things. I want to believe that the damage will be minor in terms of civil rights. And yet I don't want any one of you out there, and this goes for me as well, I don't want that hope to take away from the possibility that we'll witness some other things. We'll witness some worse things, not just policy changes, not just civil rights, not just things going in a way that we don't want them to go, but real mirrors of these fascist ideals. And be hopeful, do the best you can, but man, we got to be careful. I think you said it best earlier, that you can't let that hope keep you from confronting these things and keep you from watching carefully what goes on. Because hope can make you a void where when you may need something a little bit more active.
Yeah, it's a question in my mind of, obviously, I wouldn't say hope is a good or a bad thing. I think hope is, as a force, is a good thing. It's a question of what that means to people and what it's for. And I think that if it's an expression of somebody being mindful and aware, that's good. It's great. And again, it kind of like, where it ties in for me with religion, where it kind of becomes a cop-out for paying attention to what's going on, then I think it's hazardous. So I fear that what's happening right now and what we're going to see play out in the coming days and weeks, this is just leading up to his inauguration, to say nothing of once he is inaugurated, is a great effort by a great many people, knowingly or otherwise, to normalize this as best they can. Because what else are you going to do? You know, I understand people are living their lives. They've got things that they're thinking about. They don't care to obsess about this particular reality show. And I get that. It's problematic to dwell upon the potential concerns. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of potential concerns in people's lives. I get it. I don't have a lot going on, man. I don't have those concerns. I don't have those day-to-day concerns. So I'm either liberated by that or oppressed by that. And I'm thinking in terms of possible avenues that can play out. And as I said also in that essay, I hope that I'm wrong. That's be good for all of us, the degree to which I'm wrong. I'm not proud and want to be proven correct so that I can be that sanctimonious mm-hmm. figure that I fear.
So you can be right on top of a pile of bones.
But when I see some conversation this week about Oprah Winfrey having a tweet, she tweeted a picture of President-elect Trump meeting with Barack Obama in the White House. An image, a scenario that, in my opinion, is degrading and debasing to a man who was a great president, will be remembered as a great president, an iconic president, who President-elect Trump, for years, characterized as being a Muslim not born in the country and undeserving of the presidency. That's so, so childish.
Who created ISIS as well.
So anti-intellectual, so pandering to hate, so ominous that it's a horrible image. Now, Oprah, who was very active in supporting Obama and who is sort of an icon for black women and for feminism and all these things, she sent out a picture. And her tweet was, everybody take a deep breath, hashtag hope lives. Some people were really upset about this. Now, I, knowing Oprah as well as I do, imagine that what is meant by this is, this has been very shocking for a lot of us or a lot of people who, let's say people that voted for Hillary Clinton. Let's take a deep breath after feeling upset about this. Let's have hope that thing, you know, reasonability will prevail. Let's just take this as it comes. Okay? And I think there's value in that sentiment. I think the reason it offends people is because they're worried about this being normalized. I think what a lot of people are doing and what you'll see a lot of people do is they will be of the belief that the office of the president does something to a person. It causes somebody to be humbled. It causes somebody to, once they're elected, to realize the gravity of the position and to temper whatever rhetoric they offer during the campaign and to be reasonable. Of all the people that you might expect that from, it wouldn't be Donald Trump. I mean, if you assume everybody will do that, yes, then you could expect him to do that too. Mm-hmm. But all that he's done is give evidence of his lack of capacity to do anything resembling that. What you're seeing right now is a lot of efforts being made by him and those that are
handling him
to project
a presidential temperament.
A presidential temperament that is dignified and reasonable and inclusive. What we're already seeing within a matter of days is at times him doing that. And at times, him absolutely not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
That's already in the first week. I'm talking about his so-called conciliatory acceptance speech.
Yep.
I'm talking about him saying things like, Obama's a great man. I might keep certain aspects of Obamacare. Clinton is a great fight. Yeah. I respect
She's
her.
Tough.
Bill Clinton called me. I respect him. The Bushes. And you think, what is going on here? All of this, oftentimes with politicians, they tell different stories and they don't quite add up. They have different positions. This is so diametrically opposed to firmly held positions that mm-hmm. got him elected. It's jarring. It's calculated, I think.
Most definitely.
For people on the left to say, oh, thank goodness it's correct. He is now going to be tempered. It will be fine. And for all the people that did support him, many of whom it was very hate-filled, will look at that and be like, he's just doing what he needs to do to drain the swamp. Like, they'll just look at him. They won't be like feel like he's letting them down. They'll feel like he's playing the game.
Yeah.
The trouble is, just a few days in, Keith, He's already struggling to do that.
Yeah.
He's tweeting.
I know.
He tweeted very, he was talking about the people protesting.
Yeah.
And he characterized it very much in the way that I'm sure he perceives it, which is it's conspiratorial. You know, he suggested that they were professional protesters, as in they've been paid by Clinton advisor, Clinton people, and basically was very, extremely disparaging towards that. The very next morning, he was complimentary of it.
Yeah.
Like two opposite ends of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. And he called it unfair. That was a key, that was a word that I thought was really telling, that he can't handle it. A perfect example of what we were afraid of, that he'd have such a thin skin that he can't handle something as simple as people disagreeing with him, that he has to say, that's unfair. And that's terrifying. When a bully says, oh, because you disagree with me, you're being unfair, that's not behavior you can handle in your day-to-day life, let alone at the top of the pyramid of power in the world.
Let's be clear. In a matter of days since being elected, while the narrative is growing that Trump is normalizing, that he's being normalized, we're seeing him normalized, and the narrative is being written that he is rising to the occasion, as I'm seeing this play out, you've already seen him criticize lawful protesting. This is the president to be.
Yeah.
Criticizing lawful protesting and then dancing it back.
Yeah.
You've seen him criticizing and rebuking forcefully now the New York Times. This isn't some rag. This is the New York Times. This is like a vaunted, esteemed newspaper that is so significant. It's meant to be part of the historical record. You have an incoming president who's taunting them about their diminishing circulation, and he's basically vengefully, because he felt his treatment was unfair to him.
Yeah.
He is now basically setting a precedent already of criticizing the free press, the New York Times. He's already appointed his EPA dude, who's a climate change denier, when over 99% of scientists agree climate change is real and it's caused by humans.
Mm-hmm.
He has this Steve Bannon dude who used to run Breitbart and is basically a figurehead of the alt-right white nationalist movement, is now been put in position into his administration as a top advisor.
Mm-hmm. Maybe worse.
And he apparently announced, it was announced today that he did an interview with 60 Minutes, and he's reiterated his conviction to immediately, when he takes office, deport 2 to 3 million Latinos from the country, because he contends that these people are gang members, criminals, and that that would be the basis for that large, large number of people to be expelled from the country or imprisoned. I don't know the statistics and the numbers, but I don't accept that there are that many people. There's no rule of law. There's no, these people are going to be arrested and put on trial. He's talking about rounding up these people as if there's no human rights and just throwing out the window. This is, it's perverse.
Yeah.
And I do not think that kind of thing should be gradually folded into this narrative of normalizing it. This is like screaming from the hilltops moments. And I fear that people, because we haven't done this before, most of us, are just kind of not going to do anything about it, man.
Yes.
What is going to happen between now and January the 20th, if I'm just talking about what happened this week?
Mm-hmm.
How hopeful are you when you see these things, Keith?
Well, this is, it's tough. I'm trying very hard to be hopeful, but I'm implying a little bit of avoidance at the moment. What concerns me about along the line of what you're saying there is this normalization. It's a great word that you're using. This idea that
I know all the words.
You have the best words.
I got the best words, Keith. Understand that.
This idea that now he's timid and he's presidential, and what it's all besides. It's trying to tame us on the left and say, okay, maybe we can relax a little bit. It's doing something else that sucks a lot. It's making the pundits on the right act very casual about things that they shouldn't be casual about. So they can't go out and say, oh, yeah, he's a racist and he's going to do all these horrible things. They can't do that. So they're trying to make everything that was said seem casual. They're trying to pull back everything that's said. And there's a good example of it on CNN the other day where there was a panel, and one of the African-American women on the panel brought up that there's a KKK rally being planned to celebrate Trump's presidency in, I think, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. My apologies if that's incorrect.
I think that's right. I think I saw the same thing. I'm sure it's not the only one that's being held, but yes, I think I saw that
one. Yeah, well, there's a couple of things in the works. But this woman, she happened to be white. That doesn't mean she's a racist, but it's hard not to see the symbolism there of an African-American woman saying, hey, this is a big deal. He needs to... Trump needs to disavow this. He needs to say no. He says to say no to like these guys who are supporting him, the KKK. He needs to come out and say, look, as the president, I don't agree with this.
Just saying, in no uncertain terms.
Yes, just saying that he thinks everyone's equal or that everyone should be, we should all come together. Those are all very nice sentiments, but they're also just speeches. They're just words put together to sound nice. Obligation's a big word, and I don't know if I have the right to cast that onto somebody, but it
you
seems to me...
You have the right to cast it onto him.
It seems to me like as the president of the free world, as the leader of the free world, the president of the United States, that you should probably make it known that you don't appreciate that support or you don't support their appreciation. And instead of that happening, there's this debate going on where a black woman is saying, this is sketchy, man. Like, we can't let this happen. Especially if they think that they're, like, doing it because they have a right to and the president agrees with them. And the white lady said, oh, why are you even giving it any airtime? Don't make a big deal
out
of it.
Don't acknowledge it.
It's not a big deal. She's just casual about this threat to minorities. Casual about the empowerment of bad behavior towards African-American people and Latinos. Throughout the country, she's just going, oh, don't, it's okay, it's fine, he's not a racist, and it's not a big deal, and, you know, and I couldn't believe it. And you could see on the faces of the rest of the panel, they made horrible, speaking of me making faces on the radio, they were just absolutely dumbfounded that this woman didn't realize how horrible she was being to assume that that wasn't a big deal, that white people celebrating his election in large groups isn't a big deal.
Yes. This happens in small steps, folks. That's how it works. It's an erosion. It's an erosion. That's the process. It happens with these things where you can't quite believe what you're seeing, but then when it happens more and more, it's just the new way. And that is intolerable. Mm-hmm. That is intolerable. And when you're describing that, I'm thinking, what's next?
Yeah. And those are
less
the parallels.
People making faces. Less people rejecting it outright.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when the media has less ability to say what it wants to say because of President Trump creates a context in which you are better able to basically undermine and threaten the media with lawsuits?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's
the
one,
media
that was part
is
of his
corporate.
Position.
Everybody knows this, and everybody has grievances with this. Well, one of the grievances I feel like people don't have with the corporatization of the media is a context in which it's more susceptible to intimidation through lawsuits.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
It seems unfathomable, but is it not possible that people will express their opinions less forcefully, when they face the threat of losing their job?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, so right now, I almost feel like when you're talking about this, I'm kind of like fearful of looking back and thinking, oh, those were the good old days when somebody would have some crazy ignorant position and everybody around them would be indignant and say so.
Mm-hmm.
I fear that those could become the good old days unless people say, what the hell is wrong with you?
Yeah. Well, that's what and that's where the hope takes over for me. I don't fear it yet. I fear complacency.
What would it take for you to be afraid?
Well, a continued complacency when something that...
What's the threshold, though?
Yeah, well, see, that's scary.
Well, let's try to define it, because if we don't define it, then the gradual process plays out, and it'll become very easy to define retrospectively, but useless.
Well,
so why don't we try to do it in advance?
Well, I guess we could try. I mean, my instinct is that it would be difficult because there's a lot of policy stuff. As I was saying earlier, there's a lot of conservative policy making that will go on in the next 100 days to 4 years that we are going to find very disturbing on a moral level or even just an emotional level, because we thought, ah, geez, we were going so well in the right direction for gay rights, and now that happened, and oh, they're messing with that, and they're making women do exploratory surgery or something horrible because they won't have an abortion. Those things are still within the political mainframe. We still understand how those were legal. So it's hard for me to say what is the most horrific thing. And in a way, I'm afraid to say it because I don't want to put on record something that where it seems I'm callous towards all these other horrible things that are going on.
Yes.
So I don't know what the answer to that is. I don't know what the thing is. Obviously, if Trump walked out into the street and shot someone dead and like he said he could without going to jail, that's a clear one, right? Where you're like, okay, the president just murdered a person on TV. Obviously, everyone has
He didn't mean it.
Yeah, obviously.
Come on, he didn't mean it.
The whole part of this hope thing is
He's allowed to defend himself. He's the president. Come on.
But obviously we want people to be hopeful, but not to the point that they go, nah, I guess we shouldn't deal with that crime, right? I mean, criminal, that's a key here. And that's would be my short answer to you, that crime is where you draw the line. But the problem is he's arguably already perpetrated crimes and, in fact, has a court case pending this month over Trump University because it's pretty much a fraud. It's a fraudulent university, and there's a fraud case against him.
I think it's going to come down more to people's morals and their ethics than the law. You know, it's like Nixon famously talked about how he was allowed to break the law because he was the president. And I think that, yes, that is a measure. But I feel like people need to understand for themselves what their moral and ethical barriers are.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's legal, it's almost like you're waiting for somebody else to define it for you. But when it's moral or ethical, you can say, I don't accept this, and this is why.
Mm-hmm.
And know that about yourself, and then stand by your convictions. So I think for a lot of people, you know, I think a lot of people would look at some of the things that have played out and would say that that line was crossed a long time ago.
Well, that's what the processing's for, is because people have been so riled up by the things he's already said. I'm taking into account this idea that he said all these things, and the hope I have is that he didn't mean them. He was just fooling us to get into power. That's
yes.
like the big blind hope, right?
Yes.
But if we're keeping our eyes open, there are things that, you're talking about the libel thing. That was part of his platform, was that he wanted to change libel laws so that the press couldn't say whatever they wanted about people.
Correct. This is not me being wildly imaginative
of a
scenario that could play out in some sort of Orwellian world. This is rooted in strong statements made by the president-elect. Gareth is hosting a show at 7 o'clock. Gareth, can you hear me right now? He's nodding. He's in the other room. You can see what we're discussing. You can see we're impassioned about it. Would you care to offer a lighthearted British perspective on what has happened this week, or are you preparing for your show? He's good. I don't blame him for that. I just wanted to be inclusive because I feel like we'd love to have some other perspectives on this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we're just going to – I don't know what's going to happen. Well, I feel like we're going to get ourselves all riled up. By the way, folks, please do give us a call at 604-822-2487. Join the conversation at 604-UBC-CITR. We're happy to hear your perspective, whatever it might be, and we'd like to talk this out. Keith.
Yes, Keith. Yeah, I...
Back to you.
I have a tendency to want to hide from this sort of stuff, and I think it's...
This has been... Let's talk about you for a bit, because this actually has been interesting, and you've talked about it a little bit. I know that in the past, particularly like a year or two ago, I don't think it's come up much, because neither of us are particularly political... especially with Canadian politics. Mm-hmm. But I remember a year or two ago, we had I won't even say heated conversation, but we kind of had two different philosophies
mm-hmm.
about voting as some sort of like obligation for the citizenry.
Yeah.
And we had a conversation where we kind of like, I think each of us kind of thought about our positions and were becoming more reinforced in our ideals about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, you know, again, Canadian politics, pretty, by comparison, pretty non-consequential, easy for me to imagine your side of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In this context, it becomes much more intolerable for me to have somebody explain to me their apathy.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been interesting to watch something as extreme as this play out and to get your perspective. And
mm-hmm.
you've kind of talked about how there's a slight shift in you specifically as it relates to this.
Yeah,
we talked, I think last week about I kind of asked you, well, what about Sarah Palin? She was a heartbeat away from the presidency. Wasn't that enough?
Yeah.
And you're like, well, it kind of seemed a little bit surreal or something. Like, it didn't quite seem like a threat. It feels like what's different is that on some level you feel, is it that you specifically feel threatened or that, or is it not that you think you'll be affected directly, but you're more offended at the implications of it? Or what is it? What is it for
you? Well, feel free to cut me off if I go long here, because I'll try to be brief. It comes from being rather studious in my approach to politics. I think I said a few weeks ago that my father, his major was poli sci, and he's worked for the government, and he's a negotiator. And I read a lot of those books when I was a kid. And I created, before I ever had any passionate connection to the world of politics, I had a studious intellectual connection to it. And because of that, I always felt a distance between myself and the process. Nothing ever riled me up or caught my attention, and I wasn't around people who were very political in my youth. So I felt, I'm disenfranchised in the right word, because I'm, it's like a white guy in Canada doing whatever he wants. I just didn't care.
You're indifferent.
I'm indifferent.
Yeah. And you were franchised, but you were indifferent.
Yeah. Don't worry.
You're heavily franchised.
I was heavily franchised.
You were like the McDonald's of being able to vote.
So up here, I don't know a lot of the ins and outs of this, but I had sort of a revelation when all of my friends got really upset about our election.
The federal election.
Yeah,
okay.
A lot of the people around me didn't want Harper to get back in. And I engaged in some conversations with some people. I wrote some words about it on my blog, and I wrote some essays about it, because I have a lot of issues with the way people behave when they're impassioned by things. Religion's a perfect example of that. I don't have a problem with the ideology of religion. I have a problem with when they get so passionate they start telling you how to live your life.
Mm-hmm.
Not just religion, but it's a good example.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a lot of bad experiences when the election was happening because of my perceived apathy, which is, again, what I feel is just sort of an inherent removal based on some of my understandings and perspective.
As far as friends being offended by it, you're saying?
I think offense is probably a big word, but I had a lot of friends who didn't understand.
They objected to it.
They objected, but it's what I noticed was that a few years before when these things came up, they weren't objecting. So what had changed was that now something was valid to them. Now there was something at stake to them.
Mm.
And up to this last election, I had never voted. And what I did...
Not even for high school president?
No.
Nothing?
Because I won high school president.
Oh, did you?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
That would have been sweet.
Right.
And then I would have...
I've never voted. Yeah. I've only ever won elections.
Yeah, and I would have built that wall.
Wow.
Yeah.
With Coke cans that you gave out to the grade eights.
Yeah. So what happened was... I did something strange, and I don't really want to go into it too much because I don't want to seem, it's my own thing. I don't want anyone's opinion about it. I don't want to be judged by it. Judge me however you want out there, but I don't want to get into it too much. But I voted. And the reason I voted was because I respected the passion of my peers.
So you're acting as a proxy for your peers?
Kinda. And even though I knew in that situation, in my region, the person who won was going to win by a landslide.
Right.
And that's usually the kind of thing I can fall back on when people say, well, why don't you, you know, all these sort of typical, like,
it's your difference.
Right. Yeah. So I often fall
who
back
cares?
On those, like, well, she's going to win anyways. What's the point? But I voted anyway. And I wasn't going to tell anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized, well, that's kind of spiteful and wasn't really my motivation.
Mm-hmm.
So I talked about it on my blog. I explained that my displeasure with people's behavior toward me, I felt alienated from my peers. I felt that they were judgmental in a way that was unnecessary and unfair. And I felt that I had a very, very strong argument as an intelligent person and a well-read person why I didn't participate. And that was...
Which is that your non-vote sent a stronger message than a vote, or just that you had the right to be non-participatory in society?
Yes, there's nothing that says that I have to do that, and nor does it take away any of my rights as a human.
Unless you move to Australia.
Nor does it take away my rights as a human being. Or a citizen of this country to choose not to.
But what were people saying about you when you said you didn't want to vote? Were they saying, how dare you, you don't deserve to be a citizen? Or what were the unfair things people were saying to you?
Well, that wasn't said directly to me. I think what my issue was with their ire. That because they were so, just like anything, if you just sat down and say, I really like this baseball team,
mm-hmm.
and someone said, I don't like that baseball team, you would have a discussion. But what was happening was, I'd say, I don't like this baseball team, and they'd say, this other baseball team is the best baseball team, and if you don't like that baseball team, I can't understand where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And then they didn't even want to hear why I didn't like that baseball
team.
And so I would say things that were not politically challenging. I would just give my perspective on the things that were happening around me. And people would, instead of responding to me as if they were my friend or that they cared about my opinion, they would go into their own diatribe about their political beliefs. And I realized that what I was perceiving as bad behavior was fueled by emotion, which is something that we all do. I do as well. When something gets emotional and I don't work as rationally. When I'm that emotional, I'm not caring as much about how I'm hurting someone else's feelings. And so I tried to understand where that was coming from. And what I got was everyone who's like me but doesn't share this one perspective thinks it's important for all of us to vote a certain way.
So you contributed to this block of votes that represented your group of friends largely?
Yeah. And
as a symbolic gesture of what? Of deferring your own perspective to the value of sharing is caring and being friends. And
see, this
what
is
why was
I
it?
I don't want to get into it too much because I come off like a bit of a.
Well, I'm not. I don't mean to belittle it.
No, it's okay.
No, I'm just trying to understand that ultimately the motivation to do it was personal, or
it was selfish.
This is a gesture to show my friendship to my friends.
No, it was sort of selfish.
Which was
That I could be selfless in that regard. That I had such a strong-held belief, and
so a selfish demonstration. Of selflessness.
Yeah.
Or, a selfless demonstration of selfishness.
No, it's a selfless demonstration of selfishness. No.
Oh, my God. We got to get the whiteboard in here to
but
keep track of this.
Quite simply, I felt like it was beyond me. I couldn't comprehend it intellectually.
Mm-hmm.
And I would gain something by trusting the people around me, whereas in most of my life, I want to control the things in front of me to a little bit of a steep incline. Right? Like, I'm a bit of a control freak, as a lot of us are, and I want to diminish that in my life. It's been problematic for me. So this idea that I can give myself over to this idea because they're so impassioned by it, because everyone else is so impassioned by it, made me feel like I was doing something I'd never done before, and that's the selfishness of it. I felt like I was improving myself as a person. But to your question, that sort of started a little bit more involvement and awareness in what's going on and why people care. And of course, those inflamed passions that I witnessed up here were doubled and tripled by what was going on in America, and even the people.
So the timing was coincidental, but reinforcing, you're saying it happened to be a year ago that there happened to be this election in Canada, and it happened to be the lay of the land. That was the origins of the orange nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And as that began to play out, it somehow played into that
conviction? Well, I'd always paid attention, but I'd never understood the emotional connection. And so by giving myself over to my peers' emotional connection, I think that was a gateway drug.
Mm.
I think it let me understand why people think. Because I never, again, I know this is very controversial, so I'm hesitant to talk about it in public, but I've never been a believer in, as we just discussed, this feeling that you have to vote or somehow you're not patriotic or you don't care about where you live. And I've just always been a little bit more mechanical about how all those processes work and how that indoctrination happens and where it comes from. And I'm more of a like, oh, lucky I was born here kind of guy.
It's interesting because it's almost like it feels like your perspective, that perspective, correct me if I'm wrong, but on some level is based on it's based on an appreciation for, you know, that kind of talk is dangerous. Like it almost is like, it's ironic to me because it would be interesting if there was a vote on fascism and your perspective was, I choose not to vote in this election because for me to be bullied into voting is fascist. It's almost like it's almost becomes a mind-bending thing because I'm sensing there's that element of it.
Yeah.
And it's almost like the stakes of an election would need to challenge.
Yeah.
It's like one outcome needs to be more likely to be fascistic than the
other. Exactly. And when it comes down to it, it's like if it hurts everyone as opposed to just hurting my feelings.
Yeah.
In that particular case, I chose to go with helping everyone to some degree. I have a friend, my friend Dan, a really close friend of mine, who asked him one time, like, you know, I asked him, how do you do it, man? You seem like you're kind of chill. You always seem to understand what's going on. And you just seem to know the right thing to do and the right thing to say. What is your philosophy on this sort of stuff? And he said, I just don't tell people what to do. Yes. And I thought, that's it. That's the simplest thing in the world. But if you're in a situation where you're telling someone else what to do, if you're asking me, hey, Keith, why aren't you participating? Because we'd like it if you did. But that's not how I was confronted. It's even if it's just a feeling and the words are right, that like you're being condemned somehow because you're not doing what I'm doing. And it doesn't matter if it's voting or religion or what kind of sauce I put on my pasta.
What if you lived in Florida and imagine it's like a week ago? and you're telling somebody not to vote for Gary Johnson. Mm-hmm. Is that allowed? Can that just be an exception?
Again, I think...
Can that be the one time that you're allowed to do it?
The fact that we're at such extremes is part of the problem. I still live in a world, and maybe it's tiny and weird to some, where you can have that conversation without telling anybody what to do. You can say, I believe this really strongly. I don't see your perspective. Please tell me. Yeah. I get in a lot of conversations in my life where I'm encouraging a healthy debate, and it doesn't happen because I state my position, and then the other person can't state theirs. And I know I saw that a lot in that election where someone would say, here's all these policies that Trump said he's going to do. Which ones do you agree with? What do you think he's going to do? And they just be like, I just feel like he's the right guy. Mm-hmm. And so how can you have that debate if not everybody's educated on their side of things? If it's just an emotional response, how can you exchange that? So if someone says, I'm voting for this guy because of I feel in my heart, I can't tell him any different, nor can I explain to him my position and have a conversation. So if I'm really frustrated and I think it's really important, then I start telling him.
It's kind of like Tom.
And that's bad
behavior. It's kind of like Tom Cruise's approach to Scientology, you know? He realized post-2004
that, was hurting his
that telling people that women shouldn't take antidepressants and that psychiatry is evil, it didn't play well. So he just kind of pulled back and he realized, if people are interested in Scientology, then I'm excited and I'll show them the way. But maybe I should stop telling my fellow actors to sign up for Scientology.
Yeah. Well, again, I think
he realized that.
Yeah.
I think yes. I think that's true. I don't think it's just effective. Forget about whether it's right or wrong. I don't think it's effective to tell people what to think because it will back them up. But again, to focus on this idea of how it's influenced your sense of civic participation mm-hmm. moving forward, will you vote in elections where you feel like the stakes are high enough? Or too soon to say?
Well, that's actually part
of... It's the difference between living in Canada and the U.S. We're talking about American politics because, frankly, when we're talking about American politics, you can easily argue this stuff affects our lives way more than any level of Canadian politics. That's why we're talking about it. It's not just a reality show that we find interesting to watch. It affects our lives more, frankly. And so is that part of it? If you had voting rights in the U.S., would watching this process play out be furthering your conviction?
Yeah, well, I've got a good answer for you. It was actually not on purpose here, but it was my friend Dan who came to visit, and I was talking to him about this, and I sat down with him and I said what I just said to you. I said, my friends are kind of being jerks to me, and they've never been jerks to me before. They've always thought it was an interesting perspective I had, and they might not have understood it, but they respected that I had it. They would debate with me or discuss with me, and it was normal. Now they're like kind of getting a bit angry and militant that I'm not participating.
Now they're more threatened by it, maybe.
Yeah, and he said to me, well, I guess it depends on what the situation is. If you were in the States and Trump is, you know, that was around that time, I guess Trump was like, had already said he was going to, or he had talked about getting involved.
Yeah, he was running for the Republican
already, okay,
nomination.
Yeah. So whatever stage that was, he said, well, if you were in the States and you had to vote against Trump to keep him out of office, would you? And my answer was immediately yes. And that was a really clarifying moment for me because I went, well, that's because it's really important that I would think that's really important. So that's when I started getting this idea that maybe I'm just not seeing what my peers are seeing.
Right. When the stakes become high enough, when it seems like the impact is real, then it engages your sense of responsibility. But when it's abstract and vague and kind of like, what's the difference between all these people? They're all liars or whatever the perspective is. It just becomes muddled.
Yeah, it's what your avoidance threshold is. And this is what we were talking about earlier in this episode is we all have an avoidance threshold where we go, I have hope, but I don't want to have to look at this all the time. But we all have to keep one eye on what's going on because we may have to confront these things despite our hope.
Well, folks, it's been an interesting show. Call next week. You know, we haven't given up hope. We invited you to call throughout
the
show.
First time we haven't got one.
Do not believe that this will deter me in my conviction that you are invited to call because we do want to hear what you have to say. I'm envisioning people that are out there who are just so close to calling. They've got the phone. They've even dialed the number and they're about to press send, but they're feeling shy. Don't feel shy, folks. Give us a call. This is Jeff Bryant. You've been listening to Now We're Talking, hosted with Keith Kennedy. And to summarize, this week we talked about the orange nightmare and how it marches on, doesn't it? Ah, yes, folks. The President of the United States, Donald Trump. Last week we played the game where we didn't know who the president-elect would be. Now we know. The orange nightmare resumes. It's bad for the world, but it's good for Now We're Talking because it gives Keith and I something to talk about. 4 years. We'll see you, folks. We'll see you for the next 4 years from our basement here at UBC. Take care.